Welcome to Better Cybersecurity, the ISF podcast. I'm your host, Steve Durbin.
ISF Chief Executive Steve Durbin is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve is in conversation with Jaya Balu, COO at Aisle, one of the world's leading experts on quantum technology and cybersecurity. Jaya shares what the future of quantum computing looks like and what businesses can do to prepare for a quantum-prevalent world. She also offers her view of how cyber and quantum technology will co-evolve in the next 10 to 20 years.
So today on the podcast, we're diving into one of the most fascinating and sometimes feared frontiers in cybersecurity, quantum computing. My guest is Jaya Balu, and one of the world's leading experts on quantum technology and cybersecurity. Jaya has spent her career helping governments and global companies understand how to secure what's next, from encryption to resilience in the quantum era. We'll talk about the coming quantum shift, what it really means for encryption and trust, and how leaders can start preparing now before the technology catches up with the headlines. Jaya, fantastic to have you. Thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Now, Jaya, you've often said that quantum computing isn't just another technology trend. It's a paradigm shift. For listeners who might not be deep in the tech, can you paint a picture of what that shift really means for cybersecurity?
So really, when we think of quantum computing, we shouldn't think of it as an evolutionary growth of our current computing, except when maybe we look at how we need computers. We've been experiencing for a very long time the advantages of something called Moore's Law, which is that every 18 months, our computing power roughly doubles, and what is actually an asymmetric decline in that computing cost. And we've been really enjoying this time. But what you see is actually Moore's Law is slowly phasing out, and we're experiencing something called Amdahl's Law, which is that you can keep adding hardware, but the equivalent compute that you were used to getting is no longer available. It's actually petering off.
Right.
So we need to have something different. So in that way, it is evolutionary, but otherwise, it's completely different than our classical computing architecture because it relies on the principles of quantum mechanics to deliver a computing platform.
Now, we often hear about the threat quantum computers pose to encryption, that they could one day break the internet. But quantum also offers new ways to secure data. Where do you see the balance between risk and opportunity?
Well, quantum absolutely does offer both advantages as well as potentially disadvantages, but that's when we consider it from the principle of all of quantum technologies. So I used to be the vice chair of the European Quantum Flagship, and what we did is we took all of the possibilities of quantum technologies and we divided them into pillars. So one pillar would be quantum computing. Another pillar is quantum communication, where you can use the principles of quantum mechanics in order to have secure, unbreakable communication using quantum key distribution. Another pillar is quantum sensors and metrology, measurements, precise measurements. And another pillar is quantum simulation. So all of these together form this quantum technology roadmap where we can actually look at that balance. However, cybersecurity is something really special here because, unfortunately, we do not have only from quantum the same ability to protect as we have to attack. And I worry that the first application of these technologies beyond the sensors, which will be super useful in the simulation, et cetera, the first real application from governments will be that offensive use to attack our current cryptographic stack.
That sounds pretty startling. And indeed, it sounds as if we ought to be doing quite a bit pretty quickly to guard against that. Are we?
We're doing some things, but I would argue that we're not doing enough and on time. Companies, large companies, now ramping up to get started. Microsoft, for example, has promised to have all of their products be post-quantum ready by 2030. And I think these kinds of movements are incredibly encouraging. We need these vendors who play such a pivotal role in all of our technology fabric to take this kind of leadership in this area and provide a sort of ubiquitous security layer that we can all enjoy, but almost transparently, so that we don't have to work individually to each build up this stack. Ideally, of course, you do want this like meshed fabric, both from the very large vendors all the way to the very small. And that could be easier because the things that you need to do in order to be post-quantum ready are not necessarily in the realm of only quantum mechanics. They're just in the realm of cryptography.
Now, many of the organizations that I speak to are, I would say, sitting on the fence, but they're sort of undecided as to whether this is a today problem for them to address or whether it's a future problem. And given everything else that people are doing, particularly in cybersecurity, sadly, it seems to me that it's being pushed into that future problem bucket. From your perspective, what practical steps should leaders be taking today to prepare for a post-quantum world?
I love this question because actually that group, we call them the crypto procrastinators. And the problem with that is that they usually haven't really done a lot of thinking about why and if they should procrastinate. So I always try to have this discussion by asking three fundamental questions. Mm-hmm. The first question is, what is it that you have to protect and how long does it need to be protected? Right. And this differs, right, between companies who have like data that is relatively ephemeral to healthcare mm-hmm. companies or in med tech or financial right. institutions. And they have a lot more at stake in terms of what they need to protect and how long there needs to be cryptographic secrecy applied to that data. So if you say 5 years or 10 years or 40 years, the amount of effort you need to put in is very different. The second question you need to ask is, when will there be a cryptographically relevant quantum computer? So a quantum computer that's there that can actually break our current encryption mechanisms. And right now, even that question is not easily answered. So it can be as close as 5 years, but can it also be, if you're a quantum skeptic, something that we won't get before we get cold fusion? So yeah. Almost never. So that there is that question of when do we actually have a quantum computer? I think, honestly, it's going to be here between the next 5 to 10 years. We will have one. So let's say between 2030 and 2035, we have a cryptographically relevant quantum computer. The third question is, okay, if that's 5 to 10 years, how long do we as society need to transition all of our current encryption systems or using quantum key distribution systems and quantum communication? How long do we need to go from what we have now, this current technological stack, to this future stack? And that's when all hell breaks loose because we suck at change. We're terrible at it. So if you remember this thing called IPv4 versus mm-hmm. IPv6, yep. How are we doing on that? And so I think we need to prepare now, yesterday, preferably. There's also this problem of capture now and decrypt later. So governments all over the world, everybody does it. The Americans are doing it in the Utah data center facility. I'm sure you've seen the satellite dishes in Menwith Hill in the UK, the Australian. We have lots of equipment to intercept communications traffic, and we're intercepting all of it, the encrypted stuff as well as the unencrypted stuff. So keeping it, holding on to it until there is a good quantum computer that can break into that encrypted stuff, that is a known strategy. So I think that everything we already ever transmitted is at stake. Let's make sure that everything we'll transmit isn't.
So let's say I'm listening to this now and I'm sitting there thinking, crikey, I probably missed the boat on this. I need to get onto it straight away. What are some of the really practical things that I could do today?
So even here, I have a roadmap of how we should do this. And it's actually not very difficult when you listen to it, but it's actually incredibly difficult to implement in practice. Okay. The first thing is to start treating cryptography as an asset. Just like we have regular assets and we have an asset inventory of all of our hardware and our software assets and our licenses, we should treat our cryptography as one of these assets. Mm-hmm. We should know where we're using it, how we're using it, how relevant it is to critical business processes. We genuinely need to understand that first. So that means inventorizing all of that, yeah. Even when it comes to third parties who are encrypting on our behalf or with us, et cetera. So that's where we start. Once we understand that, we need to look for a plan to transition the current existing cryptographic methods to one that is post-quantum safe. And then we're looking at key encapsulation mechanisms, we're looking at digital signatures, and NIST already has a set of cryptographic protocols you can already now use within your network. There are also suppliers and vendors that are also using these products to create VPNs, the tools that you already use. You can also ask your existing vendors, mm-hmm. when are you implementing these protocols? And I think that's really where I would like to start companies going towards, because what you hear now from a lot of these vendors is, no one's asking me.
Right.
So if there's no customer demand, why would I build it in?
No, absolutely. So how do you think we, from a cybersecurity standpoint, can communicate some of these, what are complex topics, right, to boards and teams in a way that drives understanding, but perhaps more importantly, action?
I love this question as well. Thank you. Because actually, I was lucky enough to participate in two World Economic Forum papers on the subject. One is really around the state of quantum computing, where it is, and that study has been continuously refreshed and added onto. And the second is the transition to a post-quantum safe right. economy. What does that mean? These are both board-level papers. They explain the subject rather simply, but they also are necessary in order to get operational support from boards so that companies can actually make these changes.
Great. Now, you've mentioned the World Economic Forum. Quantum research is global, right? So there's no borders to that. But cybersecurity, some might say sadly, is often national or even corporate. How can countries and industries work together better to ensure that quantum advances strengthen rather than fragment a somewhat fragmented and, I would say, fragile shared digital security?
So this is a huge worry for me, because I think there are two things that are at stake. The first is vetting of the current encryption algorithms that are there that have been publicly put out by NIST. ETSI, I'm part of the ETSI PQC conference program, and we try to make sure that there is really healthy discussion about everything that's happening around the world. But what you'll see is even here, there's a bit of fracturing of effort. So there are countries, for example, Korea is calling for their own set of algorithms. China obviously has their own set of algorithms. So I think we need to be very thoughtful, because one thing we need to already assume is the algorithms that we are trying out that are standardized, they might break down the line. They probably will be attacked, completely attacked by everyone and their mother once they're actually in production and used by major players and they form an attack surface. That will definitely happen. And yet we still have to be ready in case of that kind of failure. So that means having a plan B. And that having a plan B here is called cryptographic agility. Right. So assume that a cipher will break, assume that there will be a crappy implementation of something because our standardization isn't really quite up to par across this thing. We need standardization also with how we implement these cryptographic primitives in our hardware, in our software. We need to continuously test that. So for all of this, let's just say that, you know, some sort of failure is inevitable, but having that mean lack of resilience, that is not inevitable. We actually can shore up our defenses to make sure that we can swap out algorithms with other things. We can swap out tools with other things. And that's really how we need to think about our cybersecurity strategy here. We need to be resilient.
If I'm listening to this and I'm in a sort of small to mid-sized organization, I suppose I could be forgiven for thinking that this is a large company problem. I simply don't have the resources, the skills, the time to get my head around some of the basics of cybersecurity today, let alone worry about what might happen in some quantum environment 5 to 10 years out. What would be your advice to people of that view?
So most of these same companies don't do all of their cybersecurity themselves either, because it's simply not their core business. So they usually have third-party vendors who are doing their cybersecurity for them. It should just be a question that they can ask.
Right.
I think that is the most important thing for small, medium enterprises to do, is to just ask the question, so what is your plan here? And
right.
if that's a possibility, that's more than enough.
Okay. Simple advice. Good. Now, slightly different tack. You've been a strong advocate for diversity in cybersecurity. Quantum is such a young and rapidly evolving field. What role does diversity of background, of thought, discipline play in shaping its future responsibly, do you think?
I think in general, especially now with the whole onslaught against everything DEI, I actually think it's such a shame to waste time on excluding anyone from anything. We really need the best skill set we can possibly get. And what you see is that, especially in areas like quantum, there's not enough diversity. And I really mean specifically here, there's not enough women here. And there's a lot of programs, like I'm part of one called WICQD, W-I-Q-D, which is Women in Quantum. So it's really nice to be part of this women's group. And it's very open, because I think, honestly, in order for us to gain diversity of thought and experience and all different types of diversity, not just male, female, I think that it means that that everyone needs to be part of it. It's not just the women having a meeting mm-hmm. by themselves that are now suddenly going to change this. So we really need the men. We really need everyone who is on the same page that this is a really very big opportunity for society, because quantum computing and sensors, et cetera, all of it will solve some very fundamental issues in science that we have. And it could mean a massive amount of innovation for all of us. And I think being able to capture those benefits without worrying about the downsides, specifically in cybersecurity, but also other downsides, means that you need to have this diverse pool of thinkers.
No, I think it's absolutely essential. And I think one of the things that we've probably not done well enough within standard cybersecurity, if you like, is really take advantage of what some of the diversity can bring. I'm thinking here about neurodiversity as well, which of course is absolutely fundamental to what we do. That mm-hmm. different perspective that you get from so many different, yes, sex is the one that people always go for, but actually it's not. It's culture as well. Yeah. It's neurodiverse. Yeah. It's the whole thing. So I think if quantum provides us with an opportunity to do that, that would be an excellent step forward, I would suggest. One last question for you, Joe. If you could fast forward 10 or 20 years, what's your hope for how quantum technology and cybersecurity will have evolved together?
Again, I'm an optimist. And it's sometimes difficult to be an optimist when you see the state of the world as present, to be optimistic about the future. But I am an optimist because I do think that, you know, it's amazing. We're on a ball of dirt speeding through the universe, and here we are having this chat. Mm-hmm. And so I think things that are so foundational, even to reality in a way, when it comes to quantum mechanics and all of the beautiful questions that are there, if we would have a mechanism that would help us understand those questions better and actually even be able to answer some of them, I cannot imagine any greater opportunity for humanity than to embrace that with quantum computing. And looking at short and midterm downsides, basically keeping our secret, that it matters to our financial stability, to our political stability, especially now with all the conflict we have. That's not even an option. So what I really think that we need to think about is how do we democratize as much as possible access to our defense against a potential quantum threat? And how do we democratize the availability of quantum computing in order to benefit all of humanity? So that would be my hope for the future.
Jay, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for sharing some of those insights on what is a very fast emerging technology. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with more expert insights and thought-provoking discussions. But in the meantime, if you really enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and share the podcast. If you're interested in becoming an ISF member or continuing the conversation further, please do get in touch with me at steve.durbin@securityforum.org, or indeed get hold of me on LinkedIn. And remember, you can explore all our media and resources at our website, securityforum.org.